Mr. President, the wreckage that all of us observed yesterday and the consequences of a 500-point drop in the stock market and the great concern in this country about its economic future, it can be traced to a lot of things. I want to talk about some of them for a few minutes. I want to show a couple of charts that describe some of the origin of what has weakened this economy. And then I'm going to talk about how this all happened. But almost everyone in this country in recent years has seen advertisements like this. This was Countrywide, the biggest mortgage banker in the country, Countrywide Mortgage Bank. Countrywide had an advertisement that said this: do you have less than perfect credit? Do you have late mortgage payments? You've been denied by other lenders? Well, call us. This is a Countrywide bank, the biggest bank of its type in America, saying, essentially, you have bad credit? You need some money? Call us. Now, most people would probably hear that, as I did over the years, and I think, well, how can they do that? How does that work? You advertise it. If people have bad credit, they ought to come to you. Here's Millennium Mortgage. Millennium Mortgage, they said, quote, 12 months, no mortgage payment. That's right. We'll give you the money to make your first 12 payments if you call in the next 7 days. We pay it for you. Our loan program may reduce your current monthly payment by as much as 50% and allow you no payments for the first 12 months. Here's a mortgage company saying, hey, come on over here. Get a mortgage from us. We'll give you a home mortgage. You don't even have to make the first 12 months payment. We'll make it for you. They don't, of course, say here that what they'll do is they'll stick that on the back of the mortgage and add interest to it, but that's what they're advertising. And so here's Zoom Credit. All of these are television, radio ads. Zoom Credit says, credit approval is just seconds away. Get on the fast track at Zoom Credit. At the speed of light, Zoom Credit will pre-approve you for a car loan, a home loan, a credit card. Even if your credit is in the tank, Zoom Credit's like money in the bank. Zoom Credit specializes in credit repair and debt consolidation too. Bankruptcy? Slow credit? No credit? Who cares? That's what Zoom Credit was saying to customers. Hey, you got bad credit? You've been bankrupt? Who cares? Come and get a loan from us. So, they say, we don't care if you've got bad credit. In fact, here's what they also say. They say, get a loan from us. We'll give you what's called a low-doc loan or a no-doc loan. What is a no-doc loan? Got bad credit? Come on over here, we'll give you a loan, they say. No-doc, that means we'll give you a home mortgage and you don't even have to document for us your income. You don't have to prove your income to us. That's called no documentation. Bad credit, come and get a loan from us. No documentation, that's okay. Now, that's just unbelievable. Unbelievably ignorant, I might say. No doc, low doc. I pulled this off the internet. Perfect credit not required. No income verification loans. Pretty interesting, isn't it? Come and get a mortgage from this company. You don't have to verify your income, and you don't need perfect credit. Here's a company on the internet wants to give you a home loan. It says you can get 5 years fixed payments with 1.25% interest rates. Isn't that interesting? Of course, it's a sham. 1.25% interest rate you get to pay. In fact, again, bad credit? Come to us. We'll give you a mortgage. You don't want to document your income? That's okay. Bad credit and no documentation. Oh, by the way, we'll give you a 1.25% interest rate. Now, all of us, when we were kids, went to Western movies from time to time. And in virtually every Western movie, they had the guy that came into town with a couple old mules driving a slow wagon. And he had a silk shirt and striped pants. And he was selling snake oil. Cured everything from hiccup to the gout. right? And he was selling snake oil from the back of his wagon. Well, this is not in an old Western. These are companies on the internet, on television, on radio, and I go back to Countrywide, the largest mortgage broker. You have less than perfect credit? Come to us. We want to invite you to get a mortgage from us. So that's what happened. And now the stock market collapses on Monday. What's the relationship? Well, let me tell you what the relationship is. The relationship is that our economy is reeling from the wreckage of the subprime loan scandal. Now, what does that mean, subprime loans? Well, all of this starts with brokers. Brokers out there that are selling mortgages, and then they sell it to a mortgage bank. And then the mortgage bank sells it to, they securitize it and sell it up to a hedge fund. And the hedge fund probably sells it to an investment bank. And what they do is they loan money to people with bad credit and provide no documentation, or they loan money to people with good credit and give them teaser rates with resets and prepayment penalties that the people can't possibly pay 3 years later, and set them up for failure, and then sell these loans in a security like they used to pack sawdust and sausage. They pack bad loans with good loans, they slice them and dice them, and sell them up the stream. And so now you've got loans where a cold call to a person that had a home by a broker saying, you know what, you're paying, 6% interest rate on your home mortgage? We'll give you one for 1.25%. We'll dramatically reduce your home mortgage monthly payment. And oh, by the way, we're not going to emphasize this. In fact, we may just mention it in a whisper. Ultimately, it's going to reset and it'll be 10% in 3 years. And by the way, you don't have to document your income, but at any rate, you can't pay with your income at a 10% rate in 3 years, but it doesn't matter. You can sell that home and flip it between now and then. Don't worry about it. That's the kind of thing that was going on, with an unbelievable amount of greed with the brokers, with the mortgage companies, with the hedge funds, the investment banks, all grunting and snorting and shoving in the hog trough here, all making massive amounts of money, and the whole thing collapsed. Just collapsed. Now, how does it happen that it helps cause a bankruptcy in France, or a bankruptcy in Italy, or a 504-point drop of the stock market here in the United States on Monday, and so many other failures? Bear Stearns doesn't exist anymore. Lehman Brothers going bankrupt. I mean, I could go through them all. How is it that all of this is happening, all of this carnage and wreckage as a result of this greed? Let me go back just a bit. Two things, it seems to me. Number one, there are a bunch of folks that were fast talkers that decided they were going to sell Congress on financial modernization. You know, we've learned this lesson. This lesson existed in the 1930s. In the roaring 20s, it was Katie bar the door, anything goes, and the economy collapsed into a Great Depression. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt, with a New Deal, said this isn't going to happen again. Banks were failing. Banks were closing. Depositors couldn't get their money. Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the New Deal repaired that economy by saying, we're going to separate banking institutions from other risky enterprises. We're not going to let banks get engaged in real estate and securities and insurance. We're just not going to do that. Because it's the very perception of safety and soundness determines whether a bank is safe and sound. And if you injure that perception by fusing risky enterprises, real estate, for example, and securities with fundamental banking issues, you do a great disservice to this country's economy. And so they were separated. Glass-Steagall Act, for example, they were separated. About 1999, a Financial Modernization Act was passed. I was one of 8 members of the United States Senate to vote against it because it repealed the Glass-Steagall Act. Oh, they all promised firewalls. Didn't mean a thing. I warned then and I warn again now that the significant consequences of forgetting the lessons of the 1930s are going to haunt us, and they are haunting us. And so what happens is they not only pass a Financial Modernization Act, which repeals Glass-Steagall, and the very things that we put up in place to protect against this sort of thing, the mingling of risky enterprises with banking. They not only do that, but George W. Bush wins the presidency, and he comes to town, and he appoints regulators, i.e. Harvey Pitt, to run the Securities Exchange Commission, just as an example. What's the first thing he says when he gets to town? He said, you know something? You should understand, the Securities and Exchange Commission is a business-friendly place now. Right? Well, that's what happened in virtually every area of regulation. People were appointed who didn't have the foggiest interest in regulating. The whole mantra was to deregulate everything. Don't look, don't watch, don't care. And as a result, in virtually every single area, we saw this kind of greed and unbelievable activity develop across this country. And so now we went through this period with a housing bubble built up with these kinds of mortgages, and then we saw the whole thing go sour, and people wonder why. It's not surprising it all went sour. What's surprising to me is how so many interests got sucked in by this and how unbelievably damaging it has been to the American economy. I mean, how could they have missed what was going to happen here? We now have the biggest banking we have some of the biggest investment banks in the world who were buying securities that had bad value mixed in with the security, and they didn't know it, they say. Where's the due diligence? How on earth could that have happened? Now, you know, there's a kind of a no-fault capitalism and no-fault politics going on around here. No-fault capitalism, I mean, all those folks that said, get government off my back, we want to run these big enterprises the way we want to run them, and then all of a sudden they run them into the ground and they need to have the Federal Reserve Board open for the first time in their history, a window for direct lending to investment banks, just as they do to regulated banks. Why? Because they were worried they were too big to fail. If an enterprise like that is too big to fail, why is it too small to regulate? Why is it that all of the regulators sat on the sidelines while something that most people don't even know about, credit default swaps, 40-some trillion dollars in notional value of credit default swaps are out there. Much of it is as a result of dramatic borrowing and leverage. It is a house of cards with a big wind coming. And that wind can play havoc with this financial house of cards. And so the no-fault capitalism portion of it is they do what they want to do, make a lot of money. We all know what the compensation has been, unbelievable money for those at the top that are running these organizations. And then it takes a nosedive. And a bunch of our bankers and others convene in New York, and they decide, all right, who are we going to save? Who are we going to prop up? Who are we going to give a direct loan to? That's no-fault capitalism. No-fault politics. So all of those who were running around here thumbing their suspenders saying, well, we got to deregulate, we got to do this, we got to do that, let's ignore the lessons of the 1930s, let's get rid of Glass-Steagall, let's let investment banks get engaged in real estate and get engaged in securities. All of those folks are now saying, well, that's not what caused this problem. And they're still strutting their stuff saying the economy is strong. The economy's not strong. The economy is dramatically weakened as a result of what these folks did to the economy. And as a result of this administration's decision that regulation is a four-letter word. I got news for them. Regulation has more letters than four. And regulation is essential to the functioning of this kind of government. I think free markets are very important. I believe in capitalism and the free market system. I don't know of a better allocator of goods and services than the marketplace. But I also understand the marketplace needs a regulator. There need to be regulators that make certain that when the marketplace gets out of whack, somebody calls it back in. Regulators are like referees, except these regulators in this administration had no striped shirts and had no whistles to call fouls because they didn't think anything represented a foul. It was let the buyer beware. Now, what happens next? Well, regrettably, none of us know. We don't know what will happen after yesterday. We don't know what will happen the rest of the week. We don't know what else is there. Some say the biggest resets of mortgages will occur in the fourth quarter of this year, which is very soon now. We don't know the consequences of all of this, because this was a spectacular, unbelievable trail of greed that, in my judgment, has dramatically injured this country. What's important now is for us to try to create some sort of a net to catch this economy and then put it back on track with effective regulation, really effective regulation, and decide that we're going to have sound business principles, and we're going to relearn the lessons of the past. We shouldn't have to relearn them, but we will. We understood the lesson from the 1930s. We taught it in our colleges about the fundamentally unsafe condition of merging risk with banks. And yet, I can recall when it was sold to the Congress as financial modernization. It was the big shots getting their way, and we all pay a dramatic penalty for it. The economy is strong, my colleagues have said. Senator McCain, and I wouldn't normally mention him on the floor of the Senate. He's out there running for the Senate, for the presidency. But since Senator McCain grabbed pictures of me and several others and put them in television commercials to suggest, here's what's wrong, perhaps maybe it's okay for us to say, what's wrong are those that were such cheerleaders for taking apart that which was to protect this country in the first place, Glass-Steagall and others. They knew better, should have known better. And what's wrong is those who aided and abetted and carried the wood in the last 7 years to say to regulators, don't bother regulating. Get your paycheck. We'll give you a paycheck. Just be friendly, if you will. Don't regulate. Don't worry. Don't look. Those who did that did a great disservice to this country, in my judgment. Now, I recognize that this is not a political system in which one side is always all right and one side is always all wrong. That is not the case. It just is not. Both political parties for a long time have contributed much to this country. But I'd say this, we've been through a period that I think is devastating to this country's economic future. A lot hangs in the balance. And I think if the American people want more of the same, then they can sign up for that. They can say, you know, we kind of like what's going on here. We like the notion that regulators were told not to regulate and complied aggressively. We like the notion that we've got nearly 700,000 people that have lost their jobs just since the first of this year. We think this is going really, really well. But it's not. We like the fact that the price of oil doubled from July of last year to July of this year. We think that's just fine. If people really believe that, we like all these things, there's certainly a way to continue that. And that's just to say to all those that are running in support of President Bush's policies, boy, let's just keep doing it. But it seems to me, you know, the old law of holes, when you're in a hole, stop digging. It seems to me the American people understand that very, very well. It is time now, long past the time for this country to get back to fundamentals and for the American people to insist from their government the kind of responsibility that government should manifest in terms of its responsibility to protect the marketplace, to protect the American taxpayer, to try to do things that help all Americans, help lift all Americans up. This is my colleague described a bit ago, the circumstance in this economy where the wealthy have gotten very, very wealthy, much, much wealthier, and then the folks in the rest of the population are struggling to figure out, how on earth can I keep my job? We've got all these folks sending these jobs to Asia. How do I keep my job? Or if I keep my job, why is it that they withdraw my health insurance and no longer provide health insurance? Why do I not have a retirement program anymore? That's what working people face every single day. They get out of bed, many of them work two jobs, they work hard trying to do the right thing, and they discover the folks at the very top are getting by with really huge incomes. And oh, by the way, last year, the top income from a hedge fund manager was $3.6 billion. $3.6 billion. And they pay a 15% top income tax rate. Isn't that unbelievable? And by the way, they don't even pay that in most cases because they try to run their carried interest, as they call it, through tax haven countries in a circumstance where they can defer compensation and avoid paying even the small 15% income tax rate. So when somebody comes home making $3.6 billion and the spouse says, "How'd you do today, honey?" "Well, pretty well. This month I made $250 million. I mean, that's a far cry from what most American working people would understand or accept, in my judgment. When you see what's happening at the top to what's happening to the rest, there's something wrong with this economy. Now, I have just described in some detail what happened to cause this subprime collapse. And most people, I mean, it is a term that is almost foreign, subprime lending. And yet, much of it is at the root of the dramatic problems we now have, the failure of investment banks, the difficulty of all kinds of institutions that loaded up with this. Why did they load up? Because the people that sold these mortgages, subprime mortgages, put prepayment penalties in them. They loaded them up with very low interest rates at the front end, and then a reset to very high interest rates in the back end, in most cases 3 years, and then put pre-penalty payments in so you couldn't get out of it. So when they securitized it and sold the security upstream to the hedge funds and the investment banks, they looked at that and said, "Boy, this is really good. We got a huge built-in high income from these mortgages, and the borrower can't get out of it because there's a prepayment penalty." And that's why they paid premiums for it. That's why they all thought they were getting rich. It was unfettered greed. And they all made money in the short term, and the American economy takes a giant hit here in the longer term. Now, finally, let me just say, I don't think this is a case that is like all other cases. We are challenged in lots of ways, in many different days here in the United States Congress. This is a different challenge. This country's economic future hangs in the balance. And the question is, will we have the leadership? Will we exhibit the leadership to do this? Mr. President, the answer has to be yes. I mean, we can't decide, no, maybe, maybe not. The answer has to be that this requires new aggressive leadership. And we have a presidential campaign going on now. I happen to support Senator Obama. But I think it's critically important to look at the history and look at the record of candidates to find out who's going to support the kind of things that are necessary to get this country back on track. I said previously a couple of times about John Adams' description of trying to put a new country together. When he'd write to Abigail, John Adams traveled a lot and was in Europe as they were trying to put together this new country of ours. And he would write to his wife Abigail, and he would plaintively say to her in letters, who will provide the leadership for this new country of ours? Where will the leadership come from? Who will be the leaders? And then in another letter, he'd ask the same question. He'd say, he'd lament, you know, there's only us. There's me, and there's George Washington, and there's Ben Franklin, and there's Mason and Madison and Jefferson. Well, in the rearview mirror of history, it is some of the greatest human talent ever assembled, and this new country was given leadership. But every generation of Americans asks that question: where will the leadership come from? If ever there was needed new leadership to step forward to say, we need a new way, not the old way, we need to put America back on track, to get our grip and get our traction, it is now. I mean, I think our economy is in significant peril, and I know what happened to it. The question is, how do we fix this mess? How do we deal with the wreckage? And I hope that the debate that we have, and let me just say that this discussion about running for president, I have seen so much dishonesty with respect to the television commercials that have been run, and the making of issues about phrases that are used. I mean, it is unbelievable to me. And the one thing I will say I admire is Senator Barack Obama, who I have campaigned with in this country. Senator Barack Obama is talking about the future, talking about issues, talking about raising this country up, which I think is so important at this point. We need that leadership now.